Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, November 27th, 2018, and we're in the BCC conference room for our legal counsel update. And we will begin the meeting at 2:04. Item number one is funding for solid waste cleanup. I'm guessing that's you?
Yes.
Indirectly.
Just in case we ever get the, we got our solid waste cleanup people here.
So the county has three properties lined up to be cleaned up by the county. And we have more lined up afterwards, but these are just the next three that are in the queue. And we are, the code enforcement officer was wondering where the money is going to come from to fund the cleanups until the lien comes through, which might not be for several years until a property is.
Several years?
The money, yeah. Well, yeah.
It's changed.
The lien doesn't usually happen until a sale of a property. So right. That's not an expectation that the lien would pay for the cleanup. It's a refunding.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you're wondering where it's going to come from in the beginning.
Yes.
So because we opted to get a person, Solid Waste Agency isn't putting forth any funding towards cleanup that goes towards a lien later on.
I'd like to clarify one point of that. It's not to fund the person, it's to fund the program.
Right.
Okay.
It is an important distinction elsewhere. But yeah, so the expectation, and Rob could probably explain this better. But
the funding request was to stand up the program here, but there was not a cleanup component included with it. So there's nothing preventing anybody from sending another application or the Solid Waste Agency and asking for additional money for specific cleanups.
It was my impression at the last meeting that I attended that they weren't going to be particularly supportive of funding additional cleanup beyond the funding of the program. They had earmarked $100,000 for the year for doing cleanup, and we opted to use that money instead to fund the program. And we believe the return on investment will be significantly higher. That said, something I just thought of now, so I'm going to look to Rob for this, that $100,000 was to cover the fiscal year. Because we are further into the fiscal year, and we probably won't be, HR will have to speak to when we'll be able to fill that position, but there's a lot of money that we won't have spent because we aren't funding for the entire fiscal year. So there may be money still on the table.
Right. And how much is the cost of cleanup estimated to be?
They vary. I believe we're looking in the tens of thousands.
For all three properties?
Mm-hmm.
Tens of thousands, I mean,
like
20,000?
I want to estimate 30 to 40,000 for all three.
The last one we did at Twilight was $8,000.
It was $8,000. Okay. So if we just figure 8,000 as a normal being, that was a bad one?
Well, earlier in the year we did a 22,000.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the year we did a 22,001. So
yeah, I would say that's kind of mm-hmm. 10, 8 to 10 is probably middle of the road.
So you're talking three properties, we figured 30,000, and we may be shy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I guess from the Solid Waste Agency standpoint, I won't speak for that. There's obviously six different people on there. Everybody has a different idea of how much is enough of a cash reserve to keep there for another, landfill major type cleanup effort. But yeah, Mike's right in his assessment of the room. There was definitely some concern about the level of funding that program in perpetuity, and the general sense was if it's going to be funded in future years, they wanted to see the county, to use those words, put some money towards cleanups. So what that number looks like, I don't know. And I know Arthur's argued to say that we've got, all these other things that prop up that program and say, hey, there's the county's match, it's already there. And I absolutely get that argument. So,
well, and how much, no offense, how much is in the coffers for these programs versus, I mean, they're at which point are they at the point they have to give money back to the agencies because they're putting so much in there?
There's not a trigger. It's more like an environmental reserve fund. So it's to say, worst case scenario, what could happen if we had to go do additional work at Kirby?
And how much are they funding the city a year?
The city's code enforcement, I want to say, is $35,000 a year. And they are able to, they're doing the lien processing. That's basically just paying for the actual dump fees. Their mm-hmm. CSOs put their time in, so imagine that pays for the dump fees for those projects.
CSOs aren't putting in their time. They're getting paid for their time to do that work.
They're getting paid for their time, but it's not being reimbursed by the Solid Waste Agency. The $35,000, I believe, is only going towards dump fees and maybe community corrections crews on those cleanups, but it's not paying for CSOs, I don't think.
Okay, and our we don't have a position hired, so we have program in place with current employees.
Right. Yeah.
So that's already being paid out of current budgetary dollars.
Yeah.
So to put towards the Solid Waste Agency for reimbursement for now, I think is appropriate. And then we can lien the properties to get the reimbursement down the road. But how's that any different than what the city's doing? We have staff time going towards a project. They can they can pay for the cleanup, and we'll lien it to recoup the costs or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, or is there something else you'd be recommending?
The concern is you're going to run low on money in case you need something.
The agency reserve is an
payback is 3 years from now.
Right. It's in a cash burn point a little bit right now. Not bad, but it is a cash burn.
But we're not using any money from the Solid Waste Agency at this moment because we haven't hired a position. So they may have dedicated $100,000 to a program that's not there. We're only using county dollars right now. Mm-hmm. So to say that it's going to be utilizing something that is unfair is not there. But their idea of saying the county needs to ante up more money is right now we've had how many years that they've been paying out every year to the city and zero to the county?
Not exactly, because the county pays for the monitoring and reporting at Kirby and Marlson, which is actually about $60,000 a year. And it's understand that I don't want to speak for everybody on the committee.
But it's not cleanup process. That's a different program, different requirements.
The franchise talks about the environmental program fees, which effectively are to mitigate DEQ-mandated actions. And we try very hard on the committee to not get into a keeping score, which side of the fence, obviously, because, you know, the Kirby dump, the Marlson dump, a lot of that trash came from the city and vice versa. So we all come in there with certain backgrounds and biases and everything else. I'm just telling you what the feeling of the committee was. It passed.
They're not keeping points, but they say the county needs to pay more. Yet currently, we're doing cleanup projects with just our staff, and they're not contributing at all where they are contributing to the city.
But
paying the dump fees or whatever.
Right, so again, so back to my point, though, the county has been granted $60,000 a year for Kirby and Marlson reporting for the last 8 years, probably. It was granted $110,000 to do a recap on the Kirby landfill this past year. So that's where it gets
messy. And like you already said, that covers people from the city and the county, where the cleanups are city versus county kind of thing, as far as who's responsible for.
To a degree, yeah. I mean, and then, again, we're back to, well, so what percentage of the trash in the Kirby landfill came from where? And that's where it gets, yeah.
I remember, you know, it's one of those things that all the landfills are in the county. It's a different function. The city doesn't have landfills. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be something that you can point and say. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to cleaning up properties, both the city and the county does it. So to me, the landfill should not be in the equal equation. And if they are doing that, maybe we need to change the leadership at the Solid Waste Agency until they can see that the county has a different obligation as well. But
the board can obviously appoint any three county folks to the Solid Waste Agency they want to. It's a seven-member board. So if you want to direct me to march in there and vote party line, we can do that. It will not change the math, though. That's why this is a 190 agreement where both agencies are hands-off and we try to come to collaborative solutions.
Yeah, except that they keep saying the county owes more. And so I'm trying to figure out, I don't see it as apples and apples. I see it as apples and oranges. The city's doing one program. The landfills are a different program entirely that the city hasn't had to do anything with.
Could be. I'm not being disrespectful at all. You don't have to convince me, I guess is what I would say.
So how do we convince them?
That was part of the discussion as the program.
And who's the other four board members? You got Rick Riker, Laura Glover.
Laura, the third city person, blanking. Travis Robbins from the city of CJ. Wade Elliott from the city.
Okay.
And then from our side, it's me, Brad Carlson, and Connie.
Brad Carlson doesn't work here.
Justin Fimbres.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was part of the discussion as we were in there, and there was a lot of hesitancy about granting the full $100,000, because the 190 also talks about not funding personnel. We're not directly, but it is getting into that gray area, admittedly, that it's funding a program, part of its personnel. And it passed 5-1. If we went back in there July 1st and said we want another $100,000, I don't know what the vote would be.
But you're talking $8,000, $10,000 of property, right, taking them on one at a time, mm-hmm, and asking, saying, okay, we haven't, right, received any funds on this yet. we'd like to offset that with these others.
Right. We could certainly use that money that was already allocated. There, the Solid Waste Agency is only going to want to see receipts, if you will, of showing how was that $98,000 spent that was awarded. And there's also the ability to go back in and apply for cleaning up these three specific properties. That's happened in the past as well, too. So either of those paths potentially works.
So what recommendations do you guys have to come up for funding?
So I think there's two separate questions at play. Regarding these three properties, we probably won't expense the full $98,000 this year, so there may be enough to go back and request for these specific properties. That said, we really do need to get finance involved in that conversation. I'm also concerned about the long-term solution, because if we come back next month with three more properties, it's very different. So we need to have a long-term solution.
And that's where I'm more concerned about. I mean, right now I think we can figure out a way to get the three paid for, but long-term I think we need to look at something. My recommendation is, I've said it before, it's a citation ordinance. You get a citation because you're not cleaning up your junk. There are those, if it's a citation every day for a day, they're in violation. So if they have junk for 5 days, they're paying for 5 days. That goes into a fund which helps pay for these larger properties.
And this last citation ordinance that came before the voters in the last 8 years went down at an 80% rate. The county was pretty strong about that and started a recall effort against a commissioner over it.
I understand that, but I also have looked at that ordinance and how it was written, and I think the ordinance needs to be more cleaned up and specific so people understand what they're really voting on.
I think the ordinance took too big a bite.
And it had some gray areas.
Well, then you know my opinion on citations, because Josephine County has the lowest collection rate for criminal fines in the state, and we have the highest debt in the state in our court system. Because they look at what can we assess, and they assess it all, and they collect the least amount in the state. And so their response is to add more fees to it. So our county already is over-fining and not collecting. So it's just another way to fine and not collect. Because there's no enforcement of these citations other than court.
Well, the citation ordinance would go through be initiated by my department. Of course, legal would have to be involved with that. But, you know, I liken it to a speed limit. The speed limit's 55. Cop pulls you over, he gives you a ticket. It's up to you whether you pay or not, but eventually it comes back to haunt you,
right? That's state law, and state law has a very stipulation on it that if they don't pay that ticket, they lose their license. And guess what? We have the lowest collection fee. We have the most people driving without licenses probably in the state as well because of it. But there's no hammer on a civil citation.
Sure there is. If they don't pay the citation, you can lien their property from a land use perspective. But we at least try to get some money in the meantime. And I'm not saying it's enough. We don't know because we haven't tried a citation. We haven't implemented a citation ordinance. But I guess my point is there needs to be a long-term solution. That's the one that my experience has shown is successful. I think we need to do something.
Our problem with cleaning up properties is not going to get smaller. Now that we have a process to do, it's going to get more of them.
Right. Correct.
Not less of them. And that's what they want out there. They want these properties cleaned up.
Well, some of them do.
Some of them don't. But I mean, every time you clean up one, everybody goes, wow, thanks. Mm-hmm. You know, I think when nobody knew that it would ever get done, I think they were totally against it because it was going to be, oh, you're just going to throw money at it and it won't go anywhere. Well, now it is starting to show up, starting to go. We've got a process. We've got a serious problem with just not necessarily cleanup, but drug houses and everything else, for crying out loud. So.
Well, and the biggest pushback on the citation ordinance 8 years ago is that they see it as a taking of people's land.
Sure.
And so anything that we can put a lien on, that then they lose their, you know, their property for whatever reason, and that property rights push is going to be... So is there any other options other citation? Citation is never going to cost or cover the cost of cleanup. Because it's hundreds of dollars a citation, it's thousands of dollars a cleanup.
Yeah, well, I think in the state of Oregon, what can we go up to, $250 a day or $200 per day? Every day is a separate violation. 5 days is $1,000. A month is enough to
clean
up.
Can we send them an invoice and they don't pay the invoice, just take them to small claims court?
I'm not sure. That'd be a question for Julie.
I mean, not saying, well, we're going to you know, lien your property and we're going to go through drastic measures, just send them an invoice. You did something for them. Send them an invoice. And what's small claims now up to?
$7,500
bucks?
The leaning would be more. I mean, you just put the cost of the project to the property. But
and roughly speaking, the math on liens work out that you'll start to have a regular return on liens about 4 to 5 years. That's when you start to see continuous inflow of cash.
And it can be run as a revolving loan fund, but a revolving program where the lien goes in to pay another one and we keep paying for them as they're paid back.
Just a little history. I haven't been involved in similar properties to the two most recent, but Camp Joy and some other ones I was involved in. And on those, the sale of the property is what funded it. So we use the property reserve as the loan, and then as soon as we sold it, we repaid back the property reserve. Now these
aren't county-owned properties.
But these aren't county-owned, so I'm not sure if there's a way that can get worked.
It's a similar process, but it takes longer to recoup the cost because you have to wait till property sell. And you'll have many that occur in a year or two, and you'll have some that are 20 years out.
And there are some that Camp Joy was, they were in arrears on their property taxes, so that's how we acquired that. And that doesn't sound like that's happening here.
That's correct.
On these three properties, it's not. You would have to lien it, and then if they don't pay the lien, then you sell the property or whatever.
Going forward, if there is one that the county takes possession and is able to sell, then we could put that in a fund to finance others going forward, possibly.
I wonder what ratio that would be. I mean, there's no way to tell.
Yeah.
No way to tell. But that's a tool in the toolbox that could be used for that particular situation. Because that worked out.
Yeah.
Worked out just fine.
I think today we need to decide how to do the three, and perhaps it's using money that hasn't been spent yet. And then
we'll need to get finance involved to figure out how much of that 98 we won't be spending. Because we're going to be filling the position and getting the truck and the computer equipment and office space. That'll be finalized pretty quick. But we need to figure out how much we won't be spending of that 98. Or we'll know if it's enough.
And you, Rob, you mentioned Marlson. Is that the Marlson landfill, or is it the Marlson lagoon?
The landfill. The solid waste funds paid to put a cap on that thing, and 10 or 12 years ago. And then Kirby is basically the annual monitoring of the landfill, the leachate, and the gases that come off. And then we've just started that revegetation project on top of it.
When do those sunset?
Never.
It's just about, yeah. The numbers keep going down, but yeah, you're talking parts per billion, so you know, yeah, is 4 parts per billion too much? Is 3 parts per billion per night? You know, so we just start consulting liens on
that'll
the EQ
keep
every year, and you hope they say, well, you can monitor every 2 years instead of every one. And so the 66 is now 55 a year, but it's for the foreseeable future.
Hmm. Well, we need to get creative and figure out that. I would like to see somewhere along the line have a fund, and I don't know where it can come from. You know, we're talking an awful lot of different ideas, you know, one of them being a transient room tax, and I don't know where it could come from, but it's that this, to me, this is a program that really does need to be funded.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to continue on and answer the call from the public, you know, to get these things cleaned up, you know, we just don't have the money, but if it came, I don't know, we'll get, you know, creative as to where it can come from.
There's no reason it can't come from general fund. If
right.
we say this is a priority, or even the marijuana tax dollars under the property use of Augustus's kind of side of participation, if there's any portion of that left over, we can try to find some funding, but how much? I mean, are we looking
right.
at $35,000 a year like the city's doing? Are we looking at $50,000 to $100,000 a year where I could put a deputy on the road with those monies? I mean, how much is it necessarily? And if without having an idea of how much you need, why are we looking at anything other than solid waste agency?
Well, if we look at a fact and napkin sketch, we're looking at doing 12 properties per month, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we were seeing about 10 out of those 12 doing self-cleanup after court order, so we'd be looking at 2 per month that would be funding. And that's very initial numbers. So we don't know if that could change over time.
So if you went at 10, you're talking $250,000 at 10.
Well, we'd be looking at about 24 per year.
No, they're looking at 2 a month. So 24 a year at 10,000 a piece, you're talking $250,000.
Right, $250,000.
Yeah.
Now, if we go the lien route, where the lien is coming back into that same fund, we're looking at about 4 to 5 years before we'll see a regular return on the investment. And it could be close to or near self-funded after that point.
Then it would be self-funded.
It should be set up in that fashion, though.
But we're looking at 4 to 5 years. So over 4 to 5 years, we're looking at better than $1 million up front before it would be self-funded.
But it's something we can see. You can physically say, there's the success.
Yes.
Right. The frustration is you spend money and nothing, you can't see what it did.
Well, and ideally, mm-hmm. it would get to a point that we just cover the staff time and we're not
Correct.
Using the solid waste agency to cover the program. We're covering the program under our commitments.
Program.
Right.
And the solid waste agency is paying for the cleanups. That's the more appropriate outcome.
Well, and we're covering most of the program now, even staff time and everything.
Not most, all.
Well,
we're not paying
no, I
for
mean,
any
once,
thing
once
yet.
The current model we have in mind is fully
okay.
in place, we'll be paying for the vast majority of it.
So I guess today, if we could just get approval, I guess, to look into using the rest of the money to fund for these three and then get direction from the board for staff to research a plan to move forward on how we're going to fund these in the future.
I have no problem. We're set to pull the trigger on these three properties.
Correct.
So I have no problem with pulling the trigger on these three properties using part of the 98.
I'll get HR and finance and us together right now, and we'll see if we can get them to start crunching some numbers. But again, without knowing how much the properties are going to cost, yeah.
Can you put a not to exceed figure 10 apiece and not to exceed 30? Can.
If it costs 22, it costs 22.
I think if we would end up only doing partial cleanups, it's just going to breed more.
No, you got to
do it
right.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're no different than the people we're going after.
Well, and then we're going to lean on somebody's property that is still trashed and they couldn't sell.
One other item I could investigate. Talk. I don't have a 197. It's probably an Arthur question, but could the solid waste reserve fund be borrowed against with these liens being set up as an AR, and I don't know if that would pass muster with DEQ as good enough for an environmental assurance, and it could be if, you know, the whole thing hits at once, we got to do $1 million cleanup of it, whatever, spill in the river, oh, we've got all accounts receivables, it may be that the general fund or the city general fund has to backfill it in the interim, but maybe it can be borrowed against, so
it's worth asking.
I can tease that one out too.
Right.
There's no harm in pushing. They've been a very conservative group for a long time, and their reserves are pretty big.
Like I said, if you ask 7 people in the room, you get 7 different answers in there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I think, are you ready to move forward on the three? Let's get the three hammered out.
Well, I have no problem with you asking for figuring out how to fund it. That's not us really giving you permission to do. It's you guys coming up with funding options and figuring out which one we're going to do. That's not really something we have to give permission to. So what are you asking specifically of us to give permission for?
At the current time, can we use the remainder of the money that's not spent to pay for these three cleanups? And then is the board agreeable to staff working together to try and find a solution? And the reason why I say that is we don't want to invest the time if the board's not even interested in something.
I think it's almost a has to.
So can we do the cleanup and place lien on property, funding aside?
Yes, clean up the properties.
Okay.
As far as looking for options, just realize that it's only been 6 years since those ordinances went through that had such a strong response on citations. It's not that long for a memory for people to say, think of a different option.
I know. And you know where I sit, I hear a different side where people are like, I support a citation ordinance, clean it up. When we go out to the neighborhood watch meetings, mm-hmm. and again, that's not everybody, but we're getting a good sampling where people want to see something done.
80% return on a question is a pretty strong opinion.
Not written the best, but we can talk about that another day.
All right. If it can be written better and we can find a better way to advertise and get this through, But realize,
I understand.
It's certainly a consideration. We need to always be mindful of what that vote was.
I think we have to look at all the options we have right now.
Yeah.
And there were four different ordinances.
There were four ordinances, and they got voted on as a clump.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
And that took too big bite.
Most of them went together. So. Yeah.
Okay.
I know. I'm just saying we got to be careful.
We got it?
Nobody wants to hear the other part.
Sound good to you?
Yes, that's good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Item number two is the RFQ for the Fairgrounds Master Plan. Yes. And we have Fairgrounds Master People here, right?
We'll be in the hot seat.
So the Fair Board's looking at adopting a new master plan for the fairgrounds.
A year ago at a goal setting session, the seven Fair Board members chose developing a long-term master plan as their number one goal. And I was the one who put my hand up and said I'd help make that happen.
And we'll do that again.
Carefully, much more carefully. Over the last year, we've gone through several different versions, and the last two versions we've had run through with Leah's assistance and legal, making sure that whatever we come up with doesn't paint the county into a corner. And we've come up with a request for qualifications we'd like to send out to the professional world of engineers and architects to respond, get some applicants, rank them, forward those names to the commissioners for additional perusal and selection of one, and then to negotiate with that particular entity for preparing a master plan for us. We're looking at a 15-year master plan that tells us what we need to do to keep the place running for at least another 15 years.
I've got a question, I think, and it has to do with the redevelopment agency or whatever the city calls that. That's a 30-year gig over there, and if we have what historically, if you don't have your projects in that 30-year plan going in, so we have a 15-year plan, and then in 15 years, in 13 years, we're going to start doing another one for another one. How does that work with their redevelopment agency, that the second half, when they're really starting to, the end of these, those things become a real cash cow at about a third of the way through. This one will be even sooner than that. I don't want them to come back in 15 years and say, well, wasn't in our gig, so wasn't in your master plan, so therefore all the projects you have in the second 15 don't apply. How does that work? Maybe somebody can answer that for me. I don't have the answer.
And who are you thinking would be saying your future projects don't apply? The city?
City of Grants Pass. They're the redevelopment agency.
The fair is completely located within the city, so.
So we have to.
And it is.
And your
in,
redevelopment agency.
And the fairgrounds
is
in that redevelopment agency. They have to mark that out. Can't exceed 18% of city's property. 18%. And that 18% includes a Spalding Industrial Park and along 6th and 7th Street, and then goes out and winds around and puts its arms around, I think, the hospital district and the fairground.
Okay.
So, there in the last one that we closed out with the city, they were getting really creative with things they wanted to spend that money on towards the end.
Okay.
But it had to be, you could say, gosh, we really need this. We've seen it. We're right to the end of this thing, but boy, we could sure use the money for this. That was a pretty good sizable sum of money in there. Couldn't touch it because it was not a plan. It was not in the original plan for that development, redevelopment. I'm concerned about their 30-year time frame over there. My gosh, that means that no matter what development happens, mm-hmm. the schools, the county, nobody gets advantage of that uptick in values, mm-hmm. taxable value, it all goes to the redevelopment agency. So basically, we're in limbo for 30 years. That's the drawback to them. But I don't know. You know, in other words, do we have to declare that? I'd like to speak to somebody in the city and say, do we need to declare that we've got a 15 and that we're going to go for another 15 and whatever that comes up with? Is that kosher? Does that work?
Well, I think it's a conversation that we can definitely have and be looked at. You know, I think that what we're looking at right here is not necessarily, you know, creating a line of competition against what the city is planning, but within our borders and our property lines, how can we come in and move the fairgrounds forward in a positive direction? And what's our vision?
Well, it's your master plan.
Right.
For your vision.
Exactly.
That's it. But I'm just thinking about using their money to...
And I think, Mark, you've worked with them a little bit.
On our, I've met with the previous mayor, Valerie Lovelace, and two of the members on our master plan committee that we've been meeting with for the last 12 months.
She's not mayor ever.
She's
the council president.
Council president, I apologize.
Darren Fowler, who just got elected to be commissioner, he's the mayor.
Yes, thank you. The two of the city council members have been members of our master plan committee for the last 12 months since we've been meeting, and it's Dennis Roller and Rick Riker. And both, we've all already started a short list of 8 or 9 items that were just pencil scratched out, things that would be a mutual benefit that would fit within the urban renewal plan and with our long-term master plan. Things that mostly on the periphery, for example, lighting, access management, sidewalks, fencing, pathways to the sportsman's park, to the YMCA, things that would be of mutual benefit. All of it semi-commercial, but not really totally commercial, which is kind of their focus. But that we do have an avenue of discussion. They are aware of what we're doing. The city council is aware of what we've been working on. But we have not yet approached them as to what their feelings were about it and how the two plans would fit together.
Well, I'm thinking that probably a better question to ask them is: you're going to put your wish list together for 15 years. You're not going to achieve all of those. Mm-hmm. Does it stop at 15 years, or can those, because it's in on the first 15 years, can it trickle over into the second 15 years because it wasn't taken care of in the first 15? It's still in the queue. It's still on the list.
There's an advantage and disadvantage. One is with a 15-year master plan, whatever we come up with, whatever our recommendations are, the community input, the stakeholders and all that, at the end of 15 years, we may have accomplished all we want. Then again, if we haven't, we may have cut our throats for getting additional assistance from the urban renewal for the second 15 years. You're correct. So a lot of it will come down to what are our realistic goals from this master plan. Mm-hmm. So if we just get everything fixed and the way we want it to be and it's good for another 40 years, then we're okay. But who knows, there may be more stuff. I can't imagine us not wanting more in 15 years. So you're right.
But, government.
And there will always be maintenance and things like that that could be built into the plan. What would you recommend then, looking at perhaps just extending the current RFQ to a 30-year?
I'd like to have an answer first.
Okay.
Personally, Commissioner?
I don't know that it's your place to talk to the city regarding the redevelopment.
I think that's something for the governing bodies to...
Well, and the bigger thing is, I mean, we've talked about kind of bigger picture master plan county intent for the property surrounding the fairgrounds, kind of turning it into an event center of sorts, moving public works out, putting in a kind of concert venue or various things, but it's not fair. It's county. And so is it tied to the fair? Yes. Is it connected to? Yes. But we're talking about relocating parks and public works and forestry and the OSU extension and all those kind of stuff surrounding you guys, and that's all in the redevelopment agency as well. So to me, that's a conversation that is more than just fair board. Should the fair be a part of those conversations and seeing how it all joins together? Yes. But as far as it all falling on your backs, no, it's not your property that all that is entailing. So,
well, if I could add that, in the short time I've been a part of the fair board, I've noted that our responsibility, our mandate has been to operate the fairgrounds with the minimal amount of tax dollars from the county and basically run as a self-standing entity. The way we've been surviving with our maintenance has been, and repairs has been through grants and donations. The people who make those would like to know their money's going to something that's going to be there for a while. A master plan helped reinforce that, and that was our goal, was to have something for our fair and fair staff to say, this is our plan. We want to fit in with the remaining of the plan in the entire area, but we need to move forward because we're almost to the end of our good graces when it comes to getting Band-Aids. We need to have something more more substantial that people can latch on
to. You need to show movement in, that, or in the right direction for permanent stuff like the roof.
Yeah.
Of, you know, taking the arena and making it, instead of making it something, well, how long is it going to take to rip this thing down into how long is it going to take last when we get it fixed up?
There's only currently a commitment from this year or last year for a 10-year commitment at that location.
But there's 2 fives after that.
From not to the fairgrounds.
Love Abounds?
Love Abounds has some options in their contract, but as far as commitment to the fair, or at least through Rotary for the Rotary funding, was a 10-year commitment only. And the Love Abounds is the track. It's not the whole
Correct, but it is
place.
A contract.
True. Extendable options there, but so as far as time frames and master plan planning, kind of looking at, quite frankly, I think the county as a whole and facilities as a whole, we need that master plan for everything. And where the fair fits into that is great to have a plan, but the bigger, it's why I want us to do a strategic plan and start of the year, you know, and the goal setting is we do not have identified a plan for all of our county facilities, and that is a bigger concern to me. But there's still a push in the community to move the fairgrounds. I had somebody contact me a week ago and still pushing for that process of rebuilding a new fairgrounds at a different location and turning that prime real estate into business industrial. And yet it's like, well, no, the commissioners have committed 10 years at that location. And they're like, you can break that. It's like, no, we've committed 10
you
years to the location.
You will get from now, from ever ahead till ever in the future, you're going to have somebody catch you on the street and say, that needs to go away.
I hear you, but there's...
You can get it over and over and over again. I hear it occasionally from a friend of mine that's on the city council, and I just scoop it off because I see he's looking at it from real estate dollars or real estate dollars only, not the benefit of the fairground to the community.
Correct.
He's not looking at it as a sense of community. He's looking at it as a sense of dollars and cents. And if we start thinking dollars and cents instead of the fairgrounds as a asset to our community, we'll lose the whole thing. I think it's been very popular, and our response from the people towards the fairgrounds has been very positive in the last 2 to 3 years.
It has.
And I'm not going to just go, well, nice job, but we're going to sell it anyway. I'm not even going down that road. I won't.
No, but I think my point is that a master plan at the fairgrounds needs to be incorporated into a master plan bigger at the county. It doesn't do any good to have a standalone if it doesn't fit into a bigger picture, especially with the city doing their redevelopment agency right now.
I would like to see the fairgrounds have their own master plan just as much as because the fairgrounds and their we can couple all the master plans under one umbrella, but these folks are targeted with what does the fairgrounds need. They are the fair board. They're not the parks board. They're not the any other board. They are the fair board, and they are concentrating on what does the fairgrounds look like, what is the fairgrounds going to look like in 10 years, what does the fairgrounds need. And yes, it will, whatever their plan is, will, it may not fit square peg round hole or round peg round hole, but it's going to be pretty darn close for what their needs are. It can be part of the huge thing, but I think for them to focus on what the fairgrounds needs is very important.
I don't disagree. I'm just saying it doesn't do jack squat if it's going to be in conflict with what the county's doing as a whole and where we're moving. And if it is in conflict, it's not going to be good. We need to make sure they're not in conflict.
There would be no deviation, as far as I know, in the way that the, in the future, the way the fairgrounds are being operated with or without a master plan. We're going to continue to serve the 200,000 that visit and the 362 days a year that it gets used to better serve the community. I don't see any deviation from our mission along those lines. The master plan just makes it easier for us to raise the funds that we need, since we're not in the budget for the county. We need to raise money in some way to survive and to make the facilities more usable, to attract more people, and to keep those that are coming safe.
And some of
the buildings are...
How do you anticipate paying for the master plan?
That we need to negotiate. We need to find out.
And one of the things that a master plan has to be, you have to have a master plan before you go for grants. They go, was it in the master plan? And you go, no. And they say, well, sorry. A master plan is the start of everything. It shows you've given some thought into it. You spent the time. You've looked at it. Kicked it around, so on and so forth. Very important.
Well, and it gives credibility to the vision. And as far as, you know, long term, we're not trying to do anything that's going to conflict with what the county is trying to do. We're trying to enhance the fairgrounds, the presence, the reputation, so that, you know, the community usage. It's not, oh, this rundown place over here that should close. It's the center of all things kids and families and connections, and, you know, the facility is being used more and more. As we grow, every time we fix a building, we make the improvements, you see a spike increase in the usage. Mm-hmm. So the need and the demand is there. What we're trying to do is come up with one vision so that when we are standing before, you know, grant committees and other boards, when we say we're working towards putting in a kitchen, a commercial kitchen that can be used for in case of emergencies if we have a need in our county, they have a full picture of what we're trying to do. And it just lends credibility as we try to get these this funding.
So how much are you looking at this costing?
The looking at what other fairgrounds have used to develop their master plans, we're probably about the same as Polk and possibly Yamhill. Theirs ran about $30,000. The Central Washington State fairgrounds, when they did theirs, that was like $74,000. But they're like much larger than where we are. They're actually bigger than our state fairgrounds. So it's a, it would be a variable. Those were done a few years back. A lot of it comes down to the RFQ is only asking people not for proposals, but for requests for qualifications. It can allow us to sit down when we start talking numbers before we even approach funding, is to whittle down what they'll do for us as long as we can get what we want out of it at a price that would be reasonable and affordable and that we could pay. Where those funds come from yet, we don't know.
So for now, the RFQ, just qualifications to bid on a proposal, how is that? I guess I don't see why that's a benefit other than just putting an RFP out for what it would cost to do the project. Because in an RFP, they have to provide their qualifications too.
I had originally requested an RFP. And
the reason why is because if we're asking for a request for proposal, what we're asking people to do, just kind of out of the blind, out of the blue, is come up with a 15-year plan for the fairgrounds, and that would be without discussing necessarily with anybody from the fairgrounds as to what the vision is, anything with the commissioners or the community about what the vision is. It's just come up with a plan out of the blue. If we do an RFQ, what we do is we find people who are qualified, people who have done similar projects, that can do a presentation in front of the Board of Commissioners or the Fair Board or whoever, and then based on their qualifications, based on their experience, based on what they've done before, the county can then hire the master planner. And then after the master planner is hired to do the master plan, then the master planner can work with the county to come up with
that. Then you're putting something out, basically, request RFP. You have something that they can go off of to say, yeah, I can do that for this.
And RFPs, you just put in the requirements of an RFP that they work with community members, you work with staff, you work with the commissioners to get that vision. That's part of that development. An RFP would cover that as well.
The other thing is if we're looking at engineers and architects, the statutes have changed to where they need to be hired based on qualifications and not on price. So
right now this RFQ costs us
nothing.
It's just another step. Then when you go to the RFP, it costs us
whatever the cost of the study is,
whatever
or the master plan.
Right.
30 to 100,000 based on whatever their estimates are, of which we don't have the funding for yet.
And
we'd
we
have
won't
to find
know that. But whenever, you know, and I, whenever we were discussing, even at goal setting in the city of Grants Pass, the first thing I said is, don't think about the money, think about the project. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Leave the money aside. Money, 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 right? Because if you just talk money, especially in the arena of Josephine County, who doesn't have a bunch of money laying around, you'll never do anything. And we really do need this, I think, before we're going to be able to go out for... we're going to need that master plan in order to show, I think you said, credibility, first off, that we're not just a bunch of people that get together once a month and talk about horses. That we're serious about the future of the fairgrounds and how much it's going to cost and what it's going to look like at the end of 15 years. And I think that's very important, especially, you know, and I've used, like I said, I've used Gold Hill for an example in the MPO. There's money available for Gold Hill to do things in the MPO. They've got projects, and they say, well, can we get money out of the MPO? And they go, well, where's this sidewalk project or whatever in your master plan? They go, we don't have a master plan. We're working on it now. So then you're not eligible. It's not in your master plan. It hasn't been well thought out. You're just kind of throwing something out there when money's available. And that's not how, you know, I don't think that's how it's supposed to work. So I'm in favor of this because, like I say, right now in RFQ, we'll find out we'll be able to narrow it down. And this doesn't cost us anything at this point in time.
And the scope of work that's being requested, if I could add, is part of the process is to whoever, if they were to be selected, we do get it funded, we get a master planner on the ground starting to do the meetings, the community and stuff, is it's already in that there is an urban renewal project in place and that the county has other plans in surrounding areas. So it's going to be asking that master planner to, as he does his due diligence, to research those other things
those
to make
other
sure
factors.
That we there's no obvious
which is
conflicts.
All that I was asking is yes. That in the process of your master plan
yeah.
Needs to work in coordination with
yes ma'am
absolutely
the other departments and such as we're moving in a different direction around you guys potentially.
My master plan committee co-members made very clear they wanted to make sure that they got asked during our process what their process is. So when Councilman Riker and Councilman Roller added, they wanted to make sure that part of the scope of work was a recognition that there's other plans in place mm-hmm. or coming about. So very well represented.
It didn't work so well this morning, but it could work on this one. It hasn't worked on a meeting we had this morning, but it could work on this one here.
Yeah.
Right, Commissioner?
It sounds good to me.
Okay. Well, I think we're okay with it. So let's...
Okay, with that information, we'll go to our fair board, get all seven of us on the same sheet of music with an approval, and I'll get with Leah in the future, here in the near future, to pick a date to start the timeline and get it sent out to the professional circles.
It would be appropriate to make sure facilities and property management are both part of those conversations as you guys are moving forward, please.
We'll do.
Okay, you got direction?
Thank
perfect.
You.
Thank you very much for coming in and all your hard work. Pass that along to the fair board. I'll probably be able to do that this evening.
Yes, sir.
I think fair board meeting is this evening also. Item number three, draft order number 2018-XXX in the matter of administrative policies and procedures for Josephine County for the purpose of conducting business on a daily basis. Policy G15, inclement weather.
Good afternoon, Commissioners.
Yes.
So this is just a continuation of discussion last week, I suppose, about this policy. I know there was some difference of opinion on when and how the county would make the decision or if they would make the decision on closing during inclement weather. And I think this policy is actually very apropos for that divergent of opinion. It's okay if one commissioner thinks that the threshold for closing is different than what another commissioner thinks. This allows for that. The commissioner on call would you know, follow policy, and it's really just reflected what we've done in the past. Contact the people who would be able to make the best decision, and based on the weather outside, make that call. It's okay for a commissioner to say, unless it's incredibly severe, we're open. It's okay for a commissioner to say, if it's mildly severe, we're closed. And that's, you know, depending upon the particulars of the roads and the different commissioners' viewpoints, we've done that in the past.
So were the conversation kind of just, we tried to have it without you last week, part of it, but a couple things that came out of that is there had been a meeting, Commissioner DeYoung was a part of it, and the outcome of that meeting, were, at the point that he left, was the county will never close, period. Will always be open. And I wasn't in that meeting, but I understood there was further conversation after he left, as well as in the manager's meeting, that stated, no, there's times we need to close. And the statement that employees are coming to work because of the pay factor, even when maybe they shouldn't be coming to work, because they either don't have the PTO or they don't have, for whatever reason, they're coming into work. So there was kind of, out of that conversation, some of the amendments to this were made that brought it back to us.
Sure.
Now, Commissioner Harris made a couple statements last week that he was looking for it to actually have more specific guidelines of what criteria were the minimum of when there would be a closure. And this does not do that. Does that seem like a fair summary of what last week kind of talked about?
Yes. Having dealt with people that live all over the county and having to come to work at various times of, you know, whether snowing or not snowing or blowing or not blowing and flooding and not flooding. I think we really need to have one standard policy. That, you know, not that each commissioner that's on call just kind of does his own thing, you know, because there's a big difference between the way I feel about it and the way Commissioner Morgan feels about it. I don't know how Commissioner Hare feels about it, but one of the things that I find troubling to me is that I would risk life and limb, because the courthouse is open, that I would risk life and limb for a day's pay. I just can't imagine I'd do that. And if I did that, and then do I say I got in a wreck on the way in because the courthouse was open? The thing that we discussed up there is that anybody can say, hey, I'm not coming in today. I mean, like I said, I had an employee that lived out Graves Creek out there in Murphy, and gosh, he had 9 inches of snow. We had nothing. We had bare pavement town. And I didn't make him come to work. Oh, by golly, we're going to dock your pay. You know, we got paid.
But that's
out.
The key. You said you weren't going to dock his pay. They do
no,
get
I,
docked.
No, I mean, he says, we worked on the hour. If you worked, you got paid. If you didn't work, you didn't get paid.
Okay, so you just said I didn't dock his pay because he couldn't.
I was going to dock his pay because he didn't come in, but it didn't mean that he was going to say, well, if you're going to dock my pay, I'll be in. I don't know whether I'll get there or not. But
and
I'll
that's
be in.
What we're finding. Employees who come in, and every employee for the first 6 months of employment has zero time off.
Exactly.
Well, so, that's not entirely accurate. They accrue PTO from the second they're employed. They can only use it for sick for the first 6 months, and weather inclement qualifies as sick. So you can use it within your first 6 months. You just can't use it for vacation.
Okay.
So I would just, and Arthur brought it up because Arthur, you know, he was at that meeting that I was at, and it was very, very simple. My problem was is getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and looking out of my bedroom window and saying, ooh, it's snowing. And I better get a hold of so-and-so and get a hold of so-and-so and get this daisy chain thing going so that the courts can close. And then at 6:45 it starts raining, and guess what? Snow goes away and we're just fine. I just have a problem with that, whereas if the courthouse were open, then courts could do whatever they need to do. They're to me as the linchpin. If I was sitting out here in the jail and I was not going to be arraigned because Commissioner DeYoung said the courthouse is closed, I'd probably be a little upset. Because when we got sworn in, it was a three-day delay. Three-day delay for weather. I mean, weather was bad. I admit all that. But it was a three-day delay. If I'm sitting out here in the county's finest, House of Many Doors, I'm not going to be real happy at all.
So my counter to that would be that
I want to count.
There is, we're going to be open, and the employees who can try to get here may be the ones like me who are unessential. I mean, I can drive here sometimes. Last year there was a day I couldn't. I got a ride from a family member because my car...
It's not going to do well in anything inclement, I can tell you that right now. I don't even need to...
Yeah.
I don't even see
I'm just saying. I got a car for gas mileage. I didn't get a car for any other purpose. So, but I'm not one of those ones that's going to struggle to get to town. But we had that conversation with the managers or the directors about essential services or not. What services have to be provided? What services do not? And why is there a conversation about? Let the employee make that decision to come in, and it's that one employee who, no offense, didn't need to be there when the one who does need to be there can't get there because of essential services. And this is part of us developing a continuity of operations plan. It's part of every department identifying what are essential services in each department. Ryan doesn't ever get a day off because he's essential to every building in the county, no matter what day it is. But what if he's the one that lives in Weimar and can't get here and he's that essential function? And we choose to be open and the essential function can't get in. That's the sheriff's office doesn't get a close. The courts have some closure, but they have some limitations of certain deadlines. And quite frankly, they have a courtroom at the jail that could be utilized for some of those emergency situations if they had to. It doesn't have to be this building for those courts to operate. If it's an arraignment at the jail, somebody has to get released. But unless we identify essential services, we're going to find that it doesn't make any difference if we stayed open because it might be the critical person couldn't make it in, and then what good was it that our doors are open? We're providing...
The doors are open to serve the court. That'd be the only reason the doors would be open.
That's this building.
To me, yeah.
This building isn't the county. The county is all of our services around the full...
Correct. I want this. I'd say the building is open, and if it's bad out there, it said if you can't get in, don't get in. If you came into this building and it's bad weather out there, the building's open. The courts are still doing their thing up there. We don't have to start rearranging arraignments and all this stuff. The court's going to function the way they have to function. And if the building's open and somebody walks in here and finds out that every one of these offices is empty and looks outside, so it must be because of the weather. And I don't think they're going to be beaten on doors because you have to be here. That's my only point. I just want some standardization so that if the courthouse is open under normal business days following the model that the courts put forth, then it sure simplifies things.
More reason for us to separate the courts from the rest of
the building.
And the sooner that happens, then it doesn't matter if this portion of the building and the county
is open. That is a conversation that will happen, I'm sure, as long as you and I are here. We want to separate the courts.
As soon as the police department moves out in September and the district attorney is out of the top floor, that change can happen. We can force the entrance to the courts to that entrance and block off access to it on the front building. And so then if the courts want to be open, they can be open without us being here. That's something to consider as a priority of continuing to go towards them having their own designated entrance, is it won't be dependent on county offices being open. Now, if the clerk has to be open, if some statute that says the clerk has to be open when the courts are open or something like that, that was...
I think that's an urban legend.
No, the clerk said it.
Okay. Well, but they're not. I mean, the day after Thanksgiving, they're closed, but the courts are open. So it's not...
Yeah, so it's...
Okay.
I'm not ever... Do you know where that is?
I'm sorry, say what?
So if the courts are open, that the county clerk has to be open. The day after Thanksgiving...
I don't think so. Because the county clerk is a different entity.
But supposedly, if they have to file something, but quite frankly, I don't really see the difference of how soon that
gets filed. The court clerk.
Yeah. Maybe that's what you're talking about.
I don't have any conversations with the court clerk. I have conversations with our county clerk who says she's required statutorily to be open when the courts are open.
Well, we can find out.
As it relates to this policy, our practice in the past has been that we allow closures. We don't have to. If the commissioners decide that they just want it to be open all the time, that is a decision they can make. There are other government agencies, some universities that just are open, period. And you can do that if you want to. Or if you want to keep past practice and what we've done, then I would recommend, you know, codifying the policy so that we know what we're supposed to do.
If it's impossible for me to get to the office because the weather is that severe, we shouldn't be open. I live close enough and at a low enough elevation that I get the last snow in town. And if I'm getting it and I can't drive on my street because it's not safe, it's going to be worse for everybody else in the county.
Is that how the schools make that determination?
I think the schools see a drop in their clothes.
The schools have a crew that looks at the roads, and they also coordinate with Rob Brandis, and because they see some of the...
We've had the schools close for ice as well,
not
just snow.
Schools make a decision early.
Yeah.
But they also look at if any area in their district is qualifies for closure, then they close the whole district.
Yeah.
So often here in town's fine, but up on the hill they can't get to, and so they close.
The other piece that Commissioner Hare wanted defined last year was late start. And what does that mean? When is it? How does it impact people that work different shifts and all that other kind of stuff? I don't like late start. You either open or closed.
I don't like them. We talked to the department manager meeting. All the department managers don't like them. We'd rather be either closed or open, but the halfway is logistically challenging.
Late starts to me is just one more thing you got to make a decision on that you're probably going to be wrong with.
Yeah. So
you say you want late start at 11 o'clock and it's still snowing at 11 o'clock. Now you got to stop calling everybody again. I don't know if that's going to happen. If there is a process, and I can carry a hard cart and put it next to my phone at home, and when I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, I pick one number and say, call everybody and tell them we're not open today. But I don't think, I don't live on that thing, and you know darn well I don't function well on it. And so when it's up to me to say we're closed that day, I'm in trouble. I used to dread that. I'd look outside and go, get to look at my little counter. The young on call, it was nice. Commissioner Morgan had bailed me out of a couple of fire issues. I was on call. She was on it.
You could delegate.
Thank you.
You could delegate.
Sorry.
Fire.
You could delegate that authority.
I think you did delegate fire to me, so
I did.
It's okay.
She called and I said, swell. That's really swell.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on it, Dan.
Oh, I was delegated
really
as fire,
swell.
But you were on call, so I called you for my second. That's what happened.
Yeah.
So.
And it all worked out.
I'm like,
out
wait
fine.
A second. I'm not
we
trying
only,
to.
We only burned 215,000 acres, so it all worked out really well.
Well, being that there is clearly not a consensus on should we just stay open, for now, I would recommend that we keep current practice. And as
is this current practice?
This is pretty much current practice.
Okay.
It's just codifying what we do.
But I think I just need JJ's phone number, so when I'm on call and I look out and say, you better call somebody, JJ, because I'm not going to work today.
Well, it says that we coordinate with Public Works.
Good.
And Emergency Services. So you have Sarah's.
As a commissioner, you can
delegate it. It doesn't say HR. It doesn't say HR.
What does it say?
It says Sarah Rubrecht. It says Rob Brandis. And it says...
Court Administrator.
Trina? Is that her name?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's whose cell phone number I was looking at this morning going, who is this name? I can't remember who this person is.
So I know if we're unlocking the doors or not.
Okay, so there's four.
Can you add him to the list?
So if I just call somebody, I just want to call somebody and they pass the word.
Well,
because
Sarah has access to Everbridge.
Just so we get word, because we've opened the doors before and nobody's here.
Should we do it as to Sarah? Because it's basically an emergency.
Sarah's got access to Everbridge unless we bug Wendy at 5 a.m. Whoever has access to Everbridge to get the notification to all department heads and all employees.
Okay, then let's go through Sarah.
And it's easy for her just to go click, 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 and all employees have been notified.
I love it.
So we want to add that in here?
No, it's already there. It's already
there. But I loved it. He didn't like it. So.
Not for facility.
My only question would be is if it goes out to all employees and my staff gets it, and we're coming in to clear walkways or roads, gets it, and they're supposed to be out plowing.
They're exempt. This is why department heads have to define who's essential or not. Park posts may have essential functions because you have people staying in the parks.
So long as we
clarify with our own staff.
Well, the message that we send out, the message we send out isn't going to be all staff stay home. It's going to be not all essential staff.
It says it in the policy that...
Designated by the department.
Yep. It says very specifically that some people may not apply because of their specific jobs, and I don't see it in this version, but I remember reading it last week. Well, it says follow personnel and department policy, and this is what we talked about in the manager's meeting as far as department heads determining whose essential services have to be done no matter what. Facilities may have to respond to the jail on a closure. You may have to respond on Christmas Day. I mean, those are, you know, it may be on Labor Day that there's an evacuation and we all of a sudden fill the fairgrounds with people and animals, as has happened 2 years in a row now. I mean, it's one of those things that... I work those days, too, if it doesn't feel any better. But it is one of those things that this is a critical piece of our department heads identifying what are essential services, what are essential functions. Quite frankly, I don't need every PO responding to the office to handle an arraignment when they could have emailed me and I had a detainer I could electronically submit on their behalf so they don't have to respond to the office. So each department working out those details of what has to be done in a timely fashion and what functions have to be done is going to be a critical piece for us in this next year's planning and working with emergency management in each department of defining positions, defining roles. Actually, we didn't even say positions. We said functions, didn't we, in the department head meeting? We said defining what functions are essential so that regardless of who's doing it, the function has to be done.
That's all. It's set out sub in the emergency operations plan.
I should read that someday. I know I've had 2 years to read it, but I just haven't.
Discussion of essential functions.
Read it again.
Yeah, I'll read it again. I have read parts. I have skimmed it.
It's abridged. It's much better now.
Oy vey.
Well, it sounds like we're getting a lot closer to simplifying this.
So we have,
should we connect with it?
I would say as it relates to this policy, we have kind of options. We can either approve it today on the agenda, or we can push it forward until next
G down here just says essential employees is designed by their department, designated by their department shall report. Yeah. It doesn't.
We should have said essential functions is defined by the department.
And the emergency operations plan.
Okay, by department emergency operations. We said that
and
department
associated
had
essential
that we
functions
say employees.
And associated employees.
Yeah, but remember that was one of the things that's in department head meeting is so not to say people, to say functions.
Yeah, I wasn't there.
Yeah,
the reason
I put essential employees, so another thing that will come before the board is a personnel policy change that will define what essential employee is, because essential function is already defined in the employee personnel handbook, and it means something else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't see the personnel policy as being specific enough to identify those essential functions necessarily versus department policies getting to that level of...
Yeah, just in the personnel handbook, one of the first things it has is a list of definitions, and one of the things that is defined is essential function, and in the personnel handbook, that is defined as an essential function of a job, not essential function of the county. And so I added a new line that says essential employee and then defined that. And that'll come for the board with a handful of other policy changes as well. As it relates to this policy, it's just a matter of communication with the department heads to let their folks know, hey, you're essential. If an emergency happens, you have to come in.
It would be appropriate, though, to add the line to G saying as designated by department and emergency operations plan.
Yeah, I think that's very good.
And we'll add it for here.
I think instead of saying make a personal choice, it should be have discretion.
Which one?
On 1A or on 3A.
Okay. So how about legal and I work on that last line, and then we take it to the board for final approval next weekly business session?
I'm willing to approve it today. Or does it need to go to the weekly business session?
It can be approved at any time.
I think we can just approve it. Internal.
Yeah. And I mean, just editing it to say essential employees is designated by their department or emergency operation plan shall report to work during closures per department policy.
Yeah.
And is it department policy or county policy?
It's department. Okay. The department decides who's essential and who's not.
If you put it down as department policy, then you public works, then everything. It's not a county blanket.
Yeah.
It's by department.
Do you want us to
but it's our personnel policy that's defining essential. So that's why I'm saying county policy. But
on which part?
on G, I just said it. So essential employees as designated by their department or emergency operations plan shall report to work during closures per departmental or per department policy. Right now, commissioners don't approve department policies. And so I'd be concerned as far as how do we even know if department policies are in conflict with county policy or personnel policies and such, because they're not approved by us.
Not typically, no.
So I would rather that say closures per county policy, not department policy. That one word difference. So adding after department or county emergency operation plan shall report to work during closure per per county policy, not department.
I wonder if it was meant, if whoever wrote this meant that the department policy applied to the essential employee.
It could be, but we're changing the county personnel policy to have that definition.
That's fine.
All right. Yeah, right.
Got it?
Okay.
So with that change, if the board wants to make a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve this order as amended.
A second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Those I don't have an order number yet.
So. 2-0.
That's why I said this order.
Excellent.
So we're not moving it forward. This is
yeah.
Okay, we're all set.
It only took us 5 weeks and 20 meetings.
Okay, so we will fix that and bring it back with us for signature.
Okay, moving on to, you got direction, Leah? Mm-hmm. You got our panel there? Item number 4, Cannabis Advisory Panel. Commissioner Morgan, what's your...
You know, I had
time
one...
Time to dissolve it?
It is. And I think what it is it needs to be... even the recommendations of one of the members, the newest recommendation I got from him is that they be used to weed. That wasn't meant to be a pun, but it's turning into one. That they would be the ones to weed out or evaluate applications and such. And quite frankly, I think the whole system needs a bigger thing. We need to look at as a county business licenses for all businesses in the county. Right now, there's not a way to identify if we have businesses. It's something the Chamber of Commerce is concerned about and various things. So as far as I still believe that looking at any business operating in a rural residential should have a business license. And in that process, look at evaluation of how it's impacting neighbors. And that way, all businesses are treated equally, that there's not one division that's given a benefit over another. And then there could be in a board of such used to maybe those applications go through a specific designated board or subcategory board to see how they're impacting or mitigate things. But the recommendations that are being made right now, there's not a means for them to be put to use. I've also had our staff advisor for the committee recommend that we create a subcommittee under LADPC that would maybe look at the cannabis as a topic and move it under that fashion. So I think in its current format, the right decision right now is to dissolve the cannabis advisory panel as it is and revisit it, maybe rehash or redevelop it in a way that would be more beneficial. Because how the people chosen, the items in there, it didn't function. And the recommendation of the group was to dissolve, and even with some recommendations to reformat it, it doesn't fit with what our current bylaws are. And so shy of redoing the bylaws, re-looking at it all, it's no difference in dissolving and recreating it down the road.
Well, and that industry's changed dramatically since the beginning of this thing. So I think tomorrow we'll have another look at it for sure.
So, yes, at this point, my recommendation would be that we...
Do you need a motion?
Well, I have an order, but it's not... I was waiting. It's not completely finished yet. But I can work with you to finalize. It's just a basic.
It was just.
We don't want it anymore.
Or to dissolve, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out the dates of the meetings. I'll show you. This yellow part was the.
The dates of when we used to have meetings or the dates we're supposed to have right now?
It was just a way to put some kind of.
I'm okay with a simple one line, whereas. Right, it was created, whereas out. The chair and members recommended the solution that's hereby dissolved, you know, kind of thing.
We can do that. I like that.
Keeping it simple.
Very simple, yeah.
It was established. The group recommended dissolution. Hereby it's dissolved, so.
Well, then if you just took that one completely out, it's probably enough.
Yep.
Okay.
So I make a I make a motion that we approve this edited order to dissolve the Cannabis Advisory Panel.
I second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 2-0. Okay. Additional subject matter from commissioners?
I have one. There is a local... Well, there's a local resident who is a senior in college on the East Coast who's home for the next month or so who has expressed interest in doing an internship in our office with me. There's not a formal internship program with the county right now. I used to oversee it at my previous role, but Representative Dwayne Stark's nephew is who reached out and asked, can I do, because this is the career path I'd like to go, can I do a month-long internship in the board's office with you? I would love to be able to do that. He would have to fill out the volunteer and the background forms with HR, and he's been sent those, and we'd have him sign a confidentiality form through legal, but I wanted permission of the board to do that, and I think I've met him a few times just through various things in the community, and I think we've talked as a board of, as a county, supporting internships and practicums, and it's the first time I've been asked to be a part of one here, and since I don't operate independently, I wanted to bring that to you.
I think it's a great idea. I think we are, you know, we push it every opportunity we can to tell people, you know what, get involved, be exposed. I'm big on the exposure side of it, and how else are you going to do it other than just hanging out, you know, and that's, I think it's great.
So I would like permission to facilitate that if he follows up with it. And then it would be also, maybe I can work with staff that if there's a project, like an agenda or something, talking them through what that would be like
right.
and the why.
Right.
But not trying to overburden staff, I'd be responsible
for. I'm okay with that. I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
Make sure we're HR involved because you got their paperwork needs to be filled out. Volunteer stuff and if he falls down, slips on the inclement weather.
Yes, yes, as he reported when we were open.
Unless he's the guy that we set out to salt the steps.
Yeah.
Probably not essential.
Okay.
I think interns are supposed to lick all the envelopes, right? No.
Yes.
I won't tell you what they had to do in my old office.
He shows up with a stethoscope. Get out of here. Okay. Are we ready? Today is Tuesday, November 27, 2018 at 3:21 p.m. Josephine County Board of Commissioners will now meet in executive session for the following agenda items. Item 6A is amendment number 1 to lease agreement with the Library District for County Property, Main Library, 200 Northwest C Street, ORS 192.6602E. Item B is report and recommendation regarding ODOT requesting temporary easement over county property at 6th and B Streets, ORS 192.6602E. C is an offer to purchase county property not sold at auction, Murphy Creek Road, ORS 192.6602E. Item D is draft amendment number 3 to lease of county property at 870 Redwood Highway Fairgrounds, ORS 192.6602E. Item E is report and recommendation regarding potential county purchase of real property 1, ORS 192.6602E. F is report and recommendation regarding potential county purchase of real property 2, ORS 192.6602E. And G, finally, is report and recommendations regarding potential county purchase of real property 3, and item number 3, ORS 192.6602E. And approved representatives of news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the audience are asked to leave the room. Approved representatives of the news media are specifically directed not to report on or otherwise disclose any of the deliberations or anything said about these subjects during the executive session, except to state this general subject of the session as previously announced. No decision may be made in executive session. At the end of the executive session, we will return to open session and welcome the audience back in the room. The recorder will now be turned off at 2:23 p.m. And as a matter of...
Am I leaving the recorder on?
Okay, we're back in session at 4:25 p.m. And Commissioner Morgan, do you have a rundown as to what we discussed, items 6A through G?
Would like to authorize under item A the amendment for the lease agreement for Library District County property, authorize a extension or a lease for extension for 5 years with a renegotiation of the 5 years for a potential of 5 additional. B is report and recommendation to ODOT. Recommendation is to forego the appraisal and issue. It would waive the appraisal and enter into intergovernmental agreement with ODOT, and I'd make a motion that we approve the temporary easement of that recommendation for real property manager to negotiate that.
I'd second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried 2-1.
All right. So then the... figure out what that needs to say. Okay, so I'd like to make a motion that we approve the offer to purchase county property not sold at auction, Murphy Curick Road, item C.
Second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries 2-0.
Aye.
And so that would be just at the amount offered. And D is the lease at the fairgrounds, and so authorizing staff to move forward with approving or presenting the lease and working on that. Okay, E, F, and G.
Discussed.
Okay, yeah, we discussed the status, and we are going to go forward with the previous offer. There's no decision made on F. And we just simply discussed it on G, is proceed forward with pursuing the property.
Okay. Thank you very much. Going forward to item number 7, additional subjects. Legal counsel update. Seeing none, we are adjourned at 4:27 p.m.
Awesome. Thank you.